welcome to Go Global Bremen Business Talks, a podcast about the companies, technologies, and people that connect Bremen and Bremerhaven to the rest of the world. The Go Global Bremen Business Talks podcast is a joint project by Bremen Invest, the Bremen Chamber of Commerce, and the Bremen Ministry of Economic Affairs, Labor, and Europe. I'm your host, Boris Felgendreher, and today's episode is all about additive manufacturing and 3D printing. With its vibrant ecosystem of established companies, startups, research institutions, academia, and talent, Bremen is a recognized hotspot for 3D printing. My guests today are Markus Joppe, Managing Director Germany at 3D printing company Materialize here in Bremen, and Christoph Weiss, who is CEO at Bego. Bego was founded in Bremen in 1890 and today is one of the leading companies in the business of dental prosthetics and implantology. Let's jump right into the show. Hello, Markus. Hello, Christoph. Welcome to the Go Global Bremen Business Talks podcast. Thanks for being on the program.
Hello, Boris. Nice to be on the show. Thank you.
Fantastic. Guys, I want to talk to you about additive manufacturing in 3D printing today. But before we get started, maybe you can give a very short intro into you guys' background and the background of the respective companies that you work for. And maybe let's start with Bego. Bego is the old kid on the block, so to speak, right? I saw that you've guys been around since 1890, so 130 years of history. Christoph, tell us about Bego.
When we started 3D printing in 1890, we were really the first ones around the block. Nobody else was printing at that time. No, I'm just kidding. But really, we started in the late 90s, except at that time, and nobody called it 3D printing. Well, you know, this is a family business. This is a dental company. So everything we do has to do with dental restorations. And we have been working on a system called CAD/CAM for quite some time. It started in the dental market in the 80s, and then we came on board in the 90s, and then at that time was all milling. And at some point at the end of the 90s of last century, we would come across this kind of, you know, technology, this selective laser sintering and melting, which was quite unique at that time, and nobody actually could work with original products. So we would take this technology on and then would develop this selective laser melting for dental restorations. And we actually had the first dental restoration printed in the year 2001 together with a dentist. My brother is a dentist. From all we hear, the patient is still doing well, but that's how we got involved. And my personal background, I have an MBA or Diplom-Kaufmann, and so I'm not a technical guy, but I love fancy gadgets. Every company needs a little fool that gets into new technologies at some point and that dares to do new thing. And that's probably my job. In my company, I like new technologies, and then every once in a while we try out new technologies, and that's how we got into 3D printing. That didn't call 3D printing when we started.
Yeah, and maybe that's the way you stay relevant over all these years, right? If you miss the boat on important technologies, you're screwed basically. So you need to stay on board. Need to stay on the ball.
Well, I didn't look for new technologies. I was just excited by the opportunities that this additive manufacturing offers. That's how we met Markus, and I don't want to talk too much. No, it's Markus. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Markus, maybe you jump in and talk to us about Materialize, which started in 1990. I saw, so it's also not the newest kid on the block, but so you've been around a few times.
Yeah, too. But not that history like Bego has. But we started 30 years ago. It really started, and it's also interesting because the founding of Materialize, it's a Belgian company, so we're headquartered in Belgium, but the founding story is quite related to Bremen, because our founder, our CEO, Fried van Kran, has seen 30 years ago, he was a researcher at a Belgian institute, but he has seen the very first 3D printer in Europe, which was installed at Biba in Bremen. Ah. So there was really a forerunner situation in Bremen. There he has seen the machine the very first time and was immediately fascinated by the technology. And half a year later, Materialize has been founded in Belgium. And Materialize has then bought the second 3D printer in Europe. So that was, let's say, the founding story of Materialize. Since then, we are really additive manufacturing. That's how we like to call it, or 3D printing. That's really our DNA. So It's in the core of our activities, and we do nearly everything around 3D printing. So everything we do has to do with 3D printing. So that's our major business. So we are active in at one side. We are using 3D printing to produce parts and mm-hmm. deliver it to industry, to applications. And the other side, we are also in our quite involved from the very beginning in software development, because in the end, 3D printing, you can also see it as a more as a digital manufacturing method. Therefore, software is very important to run such a process. Therefore, software development is a second business area we are having, and also driven a little bit by our CEO, because he is a biomechanics engineer. He has some relation to medicine. So we, from the start, have looked how can we use 3D printing to produce patient-specific implants which help or which are better products and healthier products for patients. So therefore, medical, that's the third area where we are.
Okay, but your area of expertise goes beyond just medical. In the case of Bego, it's all medical, it's all dental, not just medical, but dental. And you guys are across the board, across many yes. different industries.
Yes, yes, yes. That's what we're doing. And it was the founding was 30 years ago. As I said, one man, one machine, you can call it that way. Meanwhile, we are around 2,500 people around the globe.
Yeah.
But then also, it's also related a little bit to myself personally. I have studied computer science in Bremen. Mm-hmm. And my first job beside my studies was at BBAR. At the same time, when our founder has seen the machine, as I started as a student there, and have developed first software tools for this really, really fascinating technology. And since then, it has evolved into the business where we are now.
Yeah, fantastic. Let's revisit some of the threads that you started to unravel here, especially around Biba, around Bremen. We'll get to that later. We'll revisit that path again. But let's take one more look before we get really into the topic at where we are with that technology, with 3D printing, which has gone through the Gartner hype cycle, just like any other technology has to, right? So there have been this early phases of overly high expectations, and then the trough of disillusionment. We're probably past that, and we're coming back up where the technology has really proven itself. Maybe Marcus, describe to us where you currently see the technology in terms of that hype cycle, in terms of that where they are on the spectrum of development across the years.
Yeah, I think we have to differentiate a little bit, as you said, where it really started, and that was one of the early beginning. It was really used as a tool to produce prototypes, so mm-hmm. in product development,
yeah.
functional parts, and so on. And this, there, it's already an accepted and well-proven technology. It's mm-hmm. used in nearly all market segment and industries. And within the last years, now we are moving from prototyping really into serial production. Mm-hmm. But there in serial production, there are some first application, and Bego really was, to my knowledge, the very first application nearly 20 years ago already really used the technology already 20 years ago for serial production. So really a pioneer there. Meanwhile, there are other applications, but I would not see it as it's in the initial phase going into serial production. There are mm-hmm. applications, but it's not on broader scale yet.
Yeah. And Christoph, in your business, is it fair to say it was almost low-hanging fruit? I mean, it's such an obvious thing where you take an implant, for example, and it's a sort of a small piece and the material is sort of right, and but it needs to be intricate. Is it almost like a low-hanging fruit of a field, of an industry that was just ripe and was just the first one to fall for 3D printing, so to speak?
Yeah. Well, that's a very good question, Boris. I don't think it was really low-hanging fruit. I thought it was low-hanging fruit. Mm-hmm. And that if I had known how much trouble I would get into, I would have not started. Thank God uh-huh. I didn't know, because now it's running very well. When we started, we really, as Marcus said, you know, we were really the first company to introducing this kind of technology into the market, you know, for in our business, but also, you know, work with final material, with final metal at that time, mm-hmm. that you could actually use as a dental restoration. We were the first one in the market. So, but at that time, you know, we really had the production, but we had no data. So, you know, until we understood that we would need to set up the whole ecosystem that you need, starting by data acquisition, data manipulation, that you then, you know, running the machines. That's how we got to know Marcus, because he was actually he was doing at that time the software to operate the machinery, printers. So that's how we were. But at that time, we really did. There was, you know, we designed or developed a car until we realized, well, you know, we have a car, we should have some highways and we should have some streets. And then when we had some streets, we decided, well, we should have some gas stations and perhaps, you know, some mechanic shops somewhere. And actually, we do need some drivers too. Yeah. So you start to get to know that you think that a car is a great thing, but without all these things, you can't drive a car, right? So that was when we started, we needed to do all of these things. So low-hanging fruit, really not. That was really tough. I got beaten up by my family because it didn't work and we lost a lot of money because you know, we didn't have all these things. And eventually, it worked out. But again, it took us some time to really to get to the fruits.
Yeah, and if you look back now, I mean, since you first started and now we're 2021, what are you most surprised about the development? Did you anticipate that we would be at this point, at this year, or were you totally off looking back?
Of course I knew 20 years ago.
Right. Yeah. In hindsight,
that's right. Nobody knew it. I didn't know either. No, but what is really amazing is you know, the number of business models that came up that are around the circle around this kind of technology. But, you know, you have to think about, we're talking about 3D printing or additive manufacturing, but there's so much more involved when it comes to the material science, when it comes to operating the units, to increase the speed, when it comes to the data acquisition, how do you do that? I mean, our case, again, we're working in industry, and now we operate on data that's gathered in the mouth of the patient. So, you know, this intraoral scanner, that's all digital. In the past, we would use models, and they were scanned with different means. So it's what I find very stimulating and intriguing is really the number of business models around this technology, and that's just great. And being one of the first in, you know, actually using the technology, you know, we have seen it all coming. I would have never expected the magnitude of different models that are available today. Honestly,
it was for me. It was a little bit, let's say that way. I have hoped that it goes in this direction, but I was already.
That's a very smart answer, Markus.
Yes.
It's probably better than mine.
But there was really a belief, to be honest. There was really a belief that there is the potential that the technology can become a serial production method also on broader scale, which I still have, and which is partly proven now. And this belief was also one of the, at least for me personally, also a driver to go into this direction and starting with founding my own company, now being part of Materialize. And also, I think it was a nice time 20 years ago, Christoph, really working with the pioneers in the industry together. Yeah.
And if you're talking to outsiders from the industry, what are some common misconceptions that you come across that you just feel are just totally wrong? That just people that are outside looking into the industry just don't get? What are some common misconceptions that you see that you want to debunk once and for all today on the podcast?
I think Christoph mentioned that already when the production was set up. There is always the the potential is there, but the misunderstanding is it's just a printer and you print something and then you're done. You have to think in a process. It starts with design, data acquisition. You have to plan the production, but also post-processing. After you have printed, you have to do something with the parts, improve the surface finish and things like that. So the pure printing is just part of the complete production process. So it's a little bit more complex than many people think. That's important for people to understand that. And the other thing is, and that's the positive what drives us also quite often, is that on the other side, many people didn't get the real potential in design freedom the process is offering. Because we all, the industry, often still tends to think a design of a part is the way how it is now, since it should be in that way. But mainly it is the design or the shape of a part looks like it is due to restrictions in classical manufacturing. And this changes with 3D printing. So in the end, the potential, lifting that potential and making it clear to customers that there is much more possible than they think. But this means also they have to start at the beginning again.
Got it.
And normally when we go to people or customers and talk with them, it's quite hard sometimes to convince them, but we have to freshly start on a sheet of paper. Then they have to understand the potential of the technology, and then we have to redesign parts, and that's very important. But that's also some of the what we often see is if customers are coming to us with a classical part, let's say designed for milling, can you produce that more cheaper with 3D printing than with classical manufacturing? Then often we have to say no. But if you change something on the part and integrate some function, make it lighter, then in the end we add value to the part, and maybe the production is still a little bit more expensive, but the part has added value, and in the end, the usage of the part has a big advantage.
Christoph, you wanted to add something to it?
Yeah, I wanted to add a little bit. I mean, Marcus is absolutely right. He was talking about shape of the whatever you want, the three-dimensional piece that you want to print. But it's not only the shape; it's also the material involved. When you know, sure, in our dental environment, you know, we have biocompatibility as a very big issue, and all the alloys that we have are optimized for casting process. And all of a sudden, we don't have a casting process anymore. We have a process that's completely different. We have metal powder and being exposed to a laser beam. And all of a sudden, it's a totally, you know, we can use different alloys that might have different advantages also in comparison with the old alloys. So that was interesting. And then perhaps, you know, to answer your question with the misconception, you know, when we're talking about 3D printing many years ago, I was under the impression that many people thought about buying their 3D printer at home to have their freshly silverware printed before the guests arrive in the evening for dinner. And of course, you know, that is, that would be a little bit exaggerated. It doesn't work. It's not like the, you know, I was referring 20 years ago to the replicator from Star Trek.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm a Trekkie, okay? So I like the idea of the replicator. I don't know if you're familiar with the replicator. It's a Star Trek Enterprise, as we call it in Germany. So, you know, I think it's just a very cool technology altogether, but it's very cool, but it's certainly not as easy to use as Marcus was just referring to, that you need to have the specific data. So, you know, not only talking about silverware, you might download your silverware shape and form from somewhere. I mean, there are libraries where you can, you know, get all kinds of shapes, even weapons. We don't like that. But, you know, then actually it takes some time. So, you know, to understand the complexity of the system, as Marcus was referring to, that's really a big issue, which at this time also probably stops the technology from being a replicator in every household. It's not there yet. We all hope it's going to be there sometimes, but it's going to take a little time.
I wonder, how has the pandemic affected the field? There's been a lot of talk and a lot of soul searching around global supply chains and how vulnerable they are. Has that created a renewed interest in the field? Have you noticed it?
Well, yeah, I'm talking to me. You know, I had a forwarder visiting me some months ago. He wanted to know how 3D printing is changing his business model. He's a forwarder, and he said, well, you know, if people print, you know, their things wherever they want them to be, then you know, they probably don't need me anymore. And that was interesting because he really understood that this 3D printing could affect a totally different industry by its existence. And that was very interesting. During the pandemic situation, of course, you know, you could it could help a little bit, but it wasn't really. I think the industry is not that ripe yet that it becomes a major impact on these kind of forwarding, for example.
I can say at least I'm agree with Christoph, but at least in the pandemic, it has proven the flexibility. Because in the end, you have seen, we have done that. I know Bigware also was active there. Mm-hmm. Many of the 3D printing companies immediately switched to produce parts which were needed or could help to fight the pandemic in the first weeks after it all started. Things like face shields, masks, or tools for ventilators, door openers, maybe simple parts. But they have been designed, produced, and delivered within some days.
Yeah.
And classical manufacturing was not able to react in this speed. And therefore, for me, it's a proof on the flexibility and the speed that technology could have. And therefore, and it's also something we see in the market. The market, many of our customers have seen that also. And also, you've heard in the supply chain, we've seen a lot of customers really had an urgent need due to a gap on a certain part in the supply chain. And then we have increased requests if we can help with 3D printing. The interesting thing is we really could help in a very short amount of time these customers, but then they understand what it's all about. And therefore, with all of these customers, now they're really looking strategically into 3D printing. Therefore, we definitely see a benefit. Well, not benefit, but at least a change in the mindset and the view on the technology in parallel to the pandemic.
Yeah. Are there certain companies or maybe industries that are just absolutely ripe for 3D printing but just haven't gotten it yet that you think they should absolutely be talking to you guys? Or what some sort of industry or company that feels like they're missing the boat, feels like they should be looking at the technology but they aren't for some reason or another?
Personally, I believe, and that's also how we look on that, in principle, you can use 3D printing in every market segment, in every industry. In the end, it depends much more, or let's say a little bit the limitations of the process are often still the part size. So the build envelope of the machine defines how big the parts can be you produce. Mm-hmm. And actually, we are in the range of 400 millimeters in all three directions. That's the major size of parts. For example, dental application, you can still fit a lot of dental restorations in one build. But if you think on aerospace, automotive, industries like that, there is not all of the parts can be produced with 3D printing yet. And the second part is really also the size of the lot of a series. If you think on millions or 100,000 of parts in an application like the dental restorations by Beigo, where it's about mass customization, they are already in this range of numbers. But for many applications, the costs and the effectiveness of the process is still not there where it could be. So it's really part size, design, and also the lot size are still some factors limiting that. But in principle, we believe it can be usable and beneficial in all industries.
Yeah, if you're looking at some of the industries that are relevant to Bremen, let's look at automotive, for example, in aerospace. What sort of typical 3D printed parts are being used there? Is it really, I mean, is it very, very small like you just described? Or just for the listener, what's the average size of a 3D printed part that's being used in their manufacturing there? And how is it being used? It's mostly for prototyping still, so it's not mass production. It's prototyping, right, in those two industries?
There's a lot of prototyping still. There are some flying parts already produced with 3D printing. Also, Materialize was one of the first which was certified to produce parts directly for Airbus. Actually, these are more plastic parts in the interior design of the cabin. So smaller clamps, smaller devices. And these are parts. There is a big interest also from Airbus and Bremen to look also into metals, really bring metals into flying aeroplanes. There, let's say the pandemic was not beneficial to drive that forward. But that's one of the major topics the Airbus industry is still looking into.
Yeah. What are some of the most more exotic uses of 3D printing that people haven't really thought about? What's a very exotic edge case, use case that you've come across where 3D printing is used that is sort of unconventional?
I wouldn't say unconventional, but if you talk about that, you always come to the classical industry, medical, aerospace, automotive. What we see a lot is really consumer goods. So the topic is personalization. Because you can produce one-of-a-kind parts, why not produce, let's say, the eyewear or the footwear or whatever, a tennis racket directly fitting to your hands?
Yeah.
Things like that. Because really personalized, individualized product. The technology allows that, and we see more and more application go in that direction. And this is not always obvious to people.
Yeah, and I saw something on your website, if I'm not mistaken. It's called iMaterialize. Is that something where I upload my own plans? I can print glasses or something? Can you elaborate on that? I found that interesting. I didn't have enough time to really dig into it. Maybe you can describe what that is.
That's a little bit more addressing the, let's say, the, I would not say the, it's the private market, the hobby market, I would say. What Christoph also was addressing, there was some hype some years ago, really, that we in some certain years, and we will use 3D printing in our garage to print a part. It's still a long way to go, and I'm not sure if this really will happen. Actually, you can still design your parts. You can, I don't know, a piece of jewelry for your partner, and you design it and can upload it, and then we or others are producing that and directly delivering it to back to you on a B2C level. But again, you have to be able to design it. And that's also a step. It's sometimes not...
Yes, it sounds difficult for the layman to do.
Yeah.
Christoph, how far are we from me being able to print my own dental work? Very far away. It will never happen.
No, actually, you could buy, you know, we have a printer. You could buy your printer. Yeah, uh-huh. You could buy material from us. I just wouldn't be sure whether you like the shape of your restoration afterwards. Yeah. So someone needs to do the design. That's where you need the specialist. Okay, you still need someone. But yeah, I mean there are technologies around. If we come up with a product that is a final restoration. We can print a final restoration that looks like natural teeth. But you know, so far we can only do one crown, a single tooth replacement, but eventually, you know, we're going to do bridges, so larger restorations. Again, that's a pretty cool technology. That could be printed, you know, chair side, but you still need this technician, the dental technician, that actually makes a design. Otherwise, you have it looks for the color, I guess, and otherwise, you know, you get teeth that don't look like your natural teeth.
Yeah,
there's still
that's a challenge.
Yeah, that's a challenge. I mean, there's still the knowledge of experienced people needed by KI that might be. Or AI that might be available at some point when it comes to design of teeth, but you can have your printer, and we're happy to provide you our printer.
Yeah. Awesome. We started talking earlier about Bremen as a hotspot for 3D printing. Is that a fair statement? I mean, I've heard it being described as a center for 3D printing in Germany, also in Europe. Is that true? And what makes Bremen special? What makes it a so-called hotspot in the 3D printing area?
I think you're absolutely, if I may answer before Markus, I think you're absolutely right. Well, because we started first. I mean, there's hardly any company in Germany that was involved in 3D printing before Markus was this company and Bagel. So yeah, we are actually pioneers. And now we provide hundreds of thousands of patients with restorations every year. Okay, so this is, it's significant. It really is significant. This technology, 3D printing, made its way into dentistry from Bremen. So we were, and together it was with Markus, because he provided us the software to run the equipment. So Markus was there right from the very beginning in a different company at that time, but still he was there. So I believe it's true. And then, of course, when it comes to applications, and we have automotive, you know, we were talking about applications earlier. We have aerospace. We tried 15 years ago to get involved with Airbus and with OHB and Bremen. They do satellites. That's another specific advantage of the technology, that you can include functions in the design that are normally not met when you come to normal process like casting or otherwise. It's a very complex process. But 15 years ago, when we talked to Airbus and OHB and Mercedes and other automotive manufacturers, that was science fiction. I mean, they were looking at us, and they looked at us. And 15 years ago, we talked about 3D. You know, at that time, nobody called it 3D printing. It called SLM and some funny looking technology. But it was just too early. So time really. Is a big factor, but until I see today, Bremen really is in the center of this kind of technology, together with Materialise, is a very big player in the market. The applications in Bremen and also us, my company.
Markus, you decided to come to Bremen when? Well, it's 2016, I believe. Or when did you expand from Belgium into Germany into Bremen? And why did you pick Bremen?
It's a little bit, as Christoph mentioned, there's a little bit longer history. Personally, I'm born in Bremen, so I always been in Bremen. And as I said, personally, I started working with the first printer then. And then in the year 2000, I founded my own company. And at this time, really focusing on software for metal printing. And at this time, really metal printing, there were really no metal printing companies offering this kind of machine. The first machine manufacturer coming up to the market then delivered their first pilot machine to Bagel at this time. So it was really the pioneering phase, but also and I founded my own company, and the focus at this time, 20 years ago, already on metal printing was quite new. And so then I was running this company here in Bremen, also in the technology park. Mm-hmm. And The second customer beside this machine manufacturer was Bego, then, in fact, and therefore that's the relation also Christoph mentioned, where we have worked together. And then with the growth of the metal technology, and I think the big player Materialize really felt, we were still a small company, that there is serious competition in the field of metal printing coming from Bremen. Then there was the decision to go together. So 10 years ago, or 11 years ago, meanwhile, nearly in 2011, beginning of 2011, Markham, my former company, has been acquired from Materialize. Uh-huh. And this was also then, let's say, the start of the Materialize location here in Bremen. So it uh-huh. evolves from Markham into Materialize then. But meanwhile, we are not only focusing on software here, we're still doing software development with a focus on metal printing. But we also have just finished our new production and development center. It will be open next week, by the way. Also the mayor of the city will come and visit us and open the new factory. Fantastic. So we also have built up a metal production. And the point is, so we are also running a metal production here. So the focus really is on metal, but also for us important, and that's a long story, sorry, but that's also important, coming back to the competences, we also do a lot of research and development on site, and we really see a big benefit, because there are also, beside the companies Christoph mentioned, there are also a lot of institutes working in the field of additive manufacturing. Some of them, like IFAM, for example, also since nearly 30 years. And this is a key benefit for us, that we can, if there's a question on lasers, if there's a question on the materials, we found this institute here with a serious and long background in this technology. And if you bring that together, let's say, really major metal production companies like Bego and Materialize, OHB, Airbus, Daimler, plus the institutes, yes, we are one of the hotspots of 3D printing in Germany, even in Europe.
If I might add, I mean, this is also true for Fraunhofer Institute. I mean, you're very right, Marcus, is totally right. I mean, there's this kind of ecosystem also in the university technology park that we are, that both Marcus and we are located. So, I mean, that, yeah, mm-hmm. I should have said that earlier. It's true. I mean, you know, we only started with Fraunhofer, IFAM, 20 years ago, and they were really the ones that we worked together with. And that's been very beneficial. And this neighborhood also to be very close. You know, sometimes people believe that now with video conversation, you know, video conference and so on, you know, being close, you know, to be able to meet, you know, actually they're across the street is a very big benefit. So this is, yeah, it's true, very, very true. A big factor in Bremen.
Yeah. How big a factor is that really? I mean, how is that different than what other cities in Germany have done that are equally claiming to be hotspots? How well developed is it here? How long did it take to develop that? What does it look like now? How big is the scene, and where is this headed? And is it headed in the right direction? Are we doing the right things to make it even more vibrant, so to speak? That's a whole bunch of questions at once, but maybe take one after another.
No, but I mean, Markus will join me later. I mean, I believe, you know, we have the kind of ecosystem. You know, we have a university, we have educated students, so people are being educated in the attached institutes from the university. They can actually work in companies that use 3D printing. They can work in companies that develop 3D printing. So they can work in institutes. They can have their PhD program on 3D printing. So, I mean, this kind of, I mean, it's all there. Then there's ECOMAT. This is probably one of the good ideas from the last government, that they introduced ECOMAT in the vicinity of the airport next to Airbus. And I know Materialize also has a little interest in the ECOMAT. So, I mean, there is, you know, what makes a hotspot? A hotspot is really, it's created when you have also competitors. I mean, you know, Materialize and Bego, we compete in certain areas, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's okay. So, you know, if you have competition, you know, you attract people that could work, you know, at both companies. We have people that work with Bego and Materialize, and we have people for Materialize and Bego that work with Materialize. So you have this intense, this kind of exchange. Competition really is good. Competition really is good when it comes to bringing up a new technology. And that's what we have in Bremen. I think that is unique to have the applications, the institutes, and the design companies and the whole ecosystem on one spot.
How well connected is that ecosystem that you're describing to the rest of the world? Like, how strong are the ties to other hotspots around the world? I mean, for Materialize, there's an obvious one, right, to Belgium, to the headquarters and your network. But what other connections exist to other parts of the world that also claim to be hotspots?
That is a good question. I think we could probably improve.
Yeah.
You could probably do more.
I think the question, that's also what I see. It, let's mm-hmm. say there are some more other hotspots, maybe more successful in marketing this knowledge to the outside world.
So which one comes to mind? Which one is the sort of the overhyped hotspot out there that's doing the best marketing?
There is for sure a hotspot in Aachen, at mm-hmm. least for metal printing, also related to the institutes there. There are other, it's hard to say. There are several hotspots, but also related to different kind of technologies in 3D printing. In Germany, I see Aachen is a hotspot, Bremen is a hotspot, and the area around Munich is a hotspot.
Mm-hmm. What sort of things do you do? I mean, when you're saying there's room for improvement, what sort of things are you planning to do to stay more connected to what's going on globally? I mean, there's probably a bunch of stuff going on in China that needs to be known, that need the institutes and research there and companies and technology. Likewise in the US, for example, what are you thinking what you could do in the future to strengthen the international connections?
For us, at least for Materialize, we have these connections because we are a global operating company. Mm-hmm. We have locations, 25 locations around the globe. Mm-hmm. We have locations in China, in Japan, in Malaysia, in Korea, in South America, in the US, in all countries in Europe. So we are already in all these markets mm-hmm. And have connections to customers there, but also to research organizations and bringing that all together. So that's for us, at least we are doing and living that already as an international company. But we are also not from our side. We love to stay, be here in Bremen. We, as said, we are very connected to the companies and the research organizations in the technology park. But let's say promotion to Bremen activities, that's not our core business. I think they are.
Yeah, it makes sense. You pointed earlier to the fact that it's very important to have the right talent. How easy or hard is it to find the right talent for your needs here in Bremen and around Bremen? And how has it changed over time?
I mean, I think what is just fantastic is university. You know that we have an excellent university in Bremen. That's involved in the education of students. And of course, you know, they do their traineeships with us and sure with Materialize and in other companies where they operate 3D printing units. That's a great core. We just need to make sure that they, you know, stay in Bremen if we want it, that we keep the best, basically. That's a big challenge, but we should try to do that. But that is fantastic. It's a little difficult. I mean, Bremen is not Munich. And Bremen is not Hamburg, so you know I have to admit there are other cities in Germany, and also around the world that are also very attractive. But Bremen, and for those people that would like to do more in 3D printing and that would like to be part of that, I'm sure. I mean, Aachen is a nice place, but I'm sure that Bremen is a perfect place to really get to know the variants of all these different technologies around 3D printing. Mm-hmm. Again, 3D printing is just, you know, it's an engine, but you know, in order to run 3D printing, there's so much more going around, starting with software that Markus developed 20 years ago, with material, with technology, with business models, how to operate, how to use this. And this is, I think, Bremen is really a great place to get people. I think we probably have to talk about it more loudly. And the Attic people are always a little, shy. You know, we don't talk about the good things about city not so often.
Yeah, are both of you mostly recruiting in Bremen or in Germany, or are you also actively looking for talent around the world to bring people here?
It is first, maybe I also it's the same for us Materialize, mm-hmm. like for Bego, the connection to the university and working with students in an early phase, offering bachelor and master thesis, and also seeing students as the recruitment pool or workforce pool for the future. That's a key benefit to stay at a technology park, same for us. And on the other side, we are mainly looking on Germany for recruitment. We also look wider, but the majority of candidates or people we are hiring is coming from Germany. It's still a fact. We are an international company, let's say, company language is English, for sure. But in the end, if you work in teams, it's still a benefit to speak German, let's say that way.
Yeah, yeah. But there's an international career, right? And you're, I mean,
yes.
There's ways to sort of start off here advantage. And then go abroad and gain some experience there.
Yes. And this is especially also, we see that that's a positive impact we also see on the corona pandemic, because the use of tools like now, like using Zoom, Teams or whatever, video conferencing tools, it doesn't matter so much where you're located. You can also work from different places. So therefore, we see already now some changes there on career paths. And there we see some benefits based on our international organization, because we can offer workplaces around the world. Without the need to work to live there. That's quite important. So this is something we see changing slowly, but I think this will also increase. That's also why we are meanwhile looking a little bit wider, let's say.
And we just had an election. There's going to be a new government coming in. Is there anything you guys need from politics? Is that a big field that you're asking for help for support, for regulation, for laws that make it easier or harder? What do you want from new politics? Or are you sort of independent and you're not really that dependent on what party is in charge?
Well, as I might end, I'm a politician myself. I'm at the local parliament in Bremen. So I'm in the Landtag in Bremen. But, you know, apart from that, but that's another thing. But, you know, that's actually too much with what I do at BEGO. But what we really need is a more positive attitude towards technology. I believe that especially 3D printing has so many advantages when it comes to climate change and how to reduce the material consumption for certain production processes and so on. So, you know, talking about climate change and make sure that we don't spoil resources, 3D printing has really big benefits. Yeah? So if it's weight of material, all kinds of stuff. So I believe, you know, technology really is a key. And we should be more open towards new technologies, just like 3D printing. And sometimes, and it's all done in universities, it's all done in institutes, it's all done in companies. And sometimes I believe that this is, some people like businesses so much, but that's the way it works. I mean, you know, we're investing into new technologies, and then eventually, as you said, low-hanging fruits, and actually there are no low-hanging fruits, they're actually very, very high-hanging fruit. Yeah. But it only works when you have people like the guys from BioNTech, okay, that at some point start to get into new technology, and then just, you know, take their own money mm-hmm. or someone's mm-hmm. money, but not state money, and come up with some crazy ideas and eventually change the world, just like the BioNTech founders did. And this is something that I would really like that this gets more appreciated by politics. You know, we don't want to have any. I don't need to have any subsidies or something. I don't want to have subsidies. I just want to be. I think we just want to be recognized in things that we do and that other companies do as well that bring us forward with technologies. More mm-hmm. technology friendliness would be great.
Yeah. Yeah. If you can make some predictions, I know predictions are always a hard game. It's always tough to make predictions, especially about the future. but let's look at this decade. What are some of your predictions of how your field will unfold? And if we reconvene here at the end of this decade, looking back, what are some of the major developments that you predict as experts in the field?
I really see that there was we will see much more application using 3D printing, also in serum manufacturing. I think there will be a big step forward. But I also would like to connect that to what Christoph said, that because that's also a major driver for us in the actual situation. We believe that with 3D printing, you can produce, let's say, parts different. In the end, you can make them lighter, better performance, more functional integrations, and also due to the principle of printing, because you're adding material in the production process where you need it, and where you don't need material, you don't have to throw mm-hmm. any material away. Yeah. So it's less material consuming, and also all the materials which you don't use for printing, you use it in the next build. So we don't produce so much waste. That's quite important. And the potential of the technology allows to build more, better, or more sustainable parts. And therefore, we believe really that 3D printing can help to produce more sustainable parts in the future. And that's something where we also believe it's not the only thing, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But it can contribute to a more sustainable world. And that's also one of the main drivers for us as a company. And I think it's also, we hear that from a lot of our partners in the industry, that they see it quite similar. And that's something also what we want like to promote and drive much more forward through marketing, media, and so on, that there is an understanding of that benefit in our society.
Yeah, so hopefully our podcast did a little bit to contribute there today.
I hope so.
Yeah. Christa, what about your predictions for this decade?
Well, I mean, I agree with Markus. I mean, sustainability is a very big issue. I think that plays a very important role. Again, if you take an aircraft, for example, you would be able to reduce the weight of an aircraft by, I don't know, perhaps 5%, because you get different parts that have a different shape because of the possibility of this production technology. You can have different shapes and less material, which is less weight. You could reduce the energy that's used in order to bring the plane up by 5%, or even perhaps even more. So, you know, that brings the world closer together. And then, of course, you were mentioning that earlier. If you think about having this on-site production units and decentralized throughout the areas, you save transport. Okay, you don't need to transport certain parts from A to B. You could have it on-site. What I liked 20 years ago, I liked the idea of having a 3D printer in space, and again the replicator, you could have your own spare parts printed on the ISS, for example, these kind of things. So that would allow us to go even further. If one issue is really that they can't go to, I mean, and I'm just making this up, but you can't go to Mars because you would need to have certain spare parts and you can't carry them on because it's too heavy, you don't know which part you would need eventually. Well, this could be solved if you have your 3D printer, then you have your spare part printed on site. This is in space. You're going to go somewhere else and have someone else transport it to you. So I think that reach is increased. And I think this is just there's just incredible opportunities in space, but also
on Earth.
Also on Earth, if you don't need to bring piece A to place B, because you can have it printed right there. And I believe this is we're talking about 3D printing right now. Okay, so but this shows what 3D printing could do for climate. I mean, I'm a strong believer that we need to introduce technologies in order to handle the climate change. It can't be just us not flying anymore, or we all go and build up, grow potatoes in our gardens. I think eventually we will want to maintain the level of wealth, which means free universities, free travel, all these kinds of, what is wealth? Wohlstand, wealth really is the opportunity to free studies in Germany. This is part of wealth, retirement funds, all these kinds of things. That's part of wealth. In order to maintain the level that we have, we need to apply technology. It doesn't work just with, we don't do this and that. And technology, 3D printing is one technology out of many, but certainly one that could help.
Yeah, it's one instrument in the orchestra. Yeah, makes sense.
And that's important. It's one instrument there, but also also business-wise, we still believe there is a lot of additional potential. That's also some of the reason of the podcast. It has grown in the last 20, 30 years a lot already. But if you look on the numbers, this is still the complete additive manufacturing market is 0.01% of the whole manufacturing market.
Yeah, good point.
So there is a lot of growth potential. Even if we just read 1% of the whole manufacturing market, this would mean factor 1,000. So there is a lot of potential in the technology in general.
Yeah, and even though we might have already crossed a couple of stages in the Gartner hype cycle, the majority of the development is still in front of us, as you just pointed out.
Exactly.
We're just at the very, very beginning of the race. Yeah. Okay. So let's make a pact. In 10 years from now, at the conclusion of the decade, we'll reconvene and see where your predictions panned out and how far we've come. Gentlemen, thank you very much for participating. Very, very good conversation. Very interesting. I hope our listeners enjoyed it just as much as I did. Thanks for being on the program.
Thank you, Boris. Thank you for the opportunity. It was really fun. It's actually nice to have the opportunity to talk about this technology. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you, Boris.
Thanks,
yes.
Christoph. Thanks, Markus. Until next time.
All right. That was the Go Global Bremen Business Talks podcast episode about additive manufacturing and 3D printing. I hope you enjoyed today's show. If so, please follow and subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss any of the future episodes. If you work for an international company planning to expand into Germany or to open a subsidiary in Germany, please contact Bremen Invest in Bremen or your local Bremen Invest office in China, Vietnam, Turkey, or the UK.
Bremen Invest has a lot of expertise in all questions related to setting up shop in Germany, and they're happy to help free of charge. You will find links in the show notes. Thanks for listening. I'm Boris Felgendreher. Until next time.